Hashtag Tim and Friends. Of course, I go by the name of the kid, Famous. You and I are tuned in to the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
We just had an off-the-air argument over which fans were most tortured in Canada. What sports team's fans are most tortured in Canada? We can discuss that at Tim and Friends. Jesse, you want to put that on the poll already? Just leave that one alone?
20 seconds in, let's do it.
Hello and welcome to Tim and Friends for this Wednesday, April 21st. We are live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and streaming at your convenience on Sportsnet now in what has already become a Wednesday tradition of the show. My friend Ken Reed will join me in studio. We'll also talk to Mike Fiuta and Dan Schulman on a slightly shorter edition of Tim and Friends. We will be with you until 6 Eastern on Sportsnet West and 360 as we take you to draw 6 of the Grand Slam of Curling Players Championship, which is underway in the Calgary bubble, to which I say, play on, players. Ha ha. You know what I'm talking. All right. Everyone else, you will be with us until 6:30 Eastern when the Jays and Blue Jays Central takes over right here. I had a game 2 between the Jays and the Red Sox. One bad inning for Hyunjin Ryu was all the Red Sox needed. Last night, Boston scored 4 runs in the 4th in a 4-2 win. Red Sox are now 12-6 on the season. Only the Dodgers are off to a better start than the Boston Red Sox. Keep telling myself it's a marathon this year. It's a marathon again. But I'm going to tell you, myself ain't listening. Add to it tonight, the Jays turn to Trent Thornton to try and slow down the top-ranked offense in baseball. I will ask Dan Schulman, who will join me next hour, if I need to make a relax. And just remember that this is indeed, what's that? Sorry, Trent Thornton is the 10th different starting pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays already? All right. 10th different starter. Disappointing news for Canada's women's hockey team today. The IIHF announcing that the Women's World Championships in Halifax and Truro, Nova Scotia, have been canceled for the second straight year due to the provincial government's concerns over COVID-19. Now, teams were set to arrive tomorrow. However, IIHF and Hockey Canada say they're hopeful the tournament can be played in another location this summer. Listen, someone get this done and in a hurry, please. Like, somewhere in the States seems to make sense. Hell, they're hosting a men's under 18 tournament in Texas starting next week. Someone call someone up in Texas and make sure that the women damn well play their world championship. Also, and I get it, listen, it's just the wrong province. We played a World Juniors in Alberta. Atlantic has their bubble. The bubble has worked pretty damn well, so I'm not throwing stones from this glass house in Ontario. Trust me on that. But just get this done. The women can't miss 2 in a row while we play a World Under 18 tournament. Also, CFL, speaking of trouble, they announced plans for a shortened 14-game season beginning August 5th. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi said there are 2 major caveats to their plan. However, and this is a big but, so call Sir Mix-a-Lot. They receive permission from public officials is one. Kind of common sense. Understood that one. 2, they also get approval from governments to host, quote, a significant number of fans in the stands in a significant number of venues at the start of the season. That would be great to see. Time will tell, and that major caveat is in there, so teams in the CFL don't lose a lot more money. I just wonder if the next time we see the CFL, it is no longer the CFL. Think about that for a second. To basketball, and the Raptors remarkably will look for their 4 straight win tonight when they host the Brooklyn Nets in Tampa. Get this, the Nets are a half game out of first place in the East, but it's the 12th place Toronto Raptors that are the favorites in Vegas tonight. I get some injuries to Brooklyn, but what in the good name of Sean Carter, Brooklyn's finest, are we talking about here? I thought it was to tank or not to tank. I thought that was the debate that rages among the fans. But as Stephen Long wrote on Sportsnet.ca, Nick Nurse continues to coach the team to play the right way, regardless of who's in the lineup. And I guess Vegas believes in them tonight. Nurse will have Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby all back tonight, while the Nets will be without Kevin Durant and James Harden. Brooklyn announced yesterday Harden had suffered a setback with his hamstring injury. Steve Nash said they are back to square one in terms of Harden's rehab. The Nets' big three, Harden, Durant, Kyrie Irving, have played just seven games together this season, and it doesn't seem like they're going to play many more, if any, before the playoffs begin. Could that open the door in the Eastern Conference? It's a lot of Saved by the Bell ooze. Raptors are a half game back of the Bulls and Wizards, who are currently tied for 10th and the final playoff spot, or at least the final spot in the play-in tournament in the East. Raptors' schedule is pretty tough over the next 2 weeks. After tonight, they head to New York to take on the NBA's hottest team. That's right. I said it. The NBA's hottest team, the New York Knicks. Shout out, Rowan Jr. Yes, Tibbs' club has won seven straight after last night's win over the Hornets, as Rowan Jr., R.J. Barrett, scored 18 of his 24 points in the third quarter alone. Knicks took control in that third quarter. Tonight, they host the Hawks. Fourth place in the East is on the line. What world do I live in? I can't eat out, and Atlanta and New York are battling for home court? Like, what the hell's going on? Atlanta's 18-6 since Nate McMillan took over. Lemon Pepper Lou is cooking. Lemon Pepper freestyle. Facts. All right, so it's not going to be easy for the Raptors to finish 10th, but before you fully commit to the tank, you might want to rethink the possibilities of the play-in tournament. You're telling me you'd rather tank for what? Hopes of the number six pick over a win or go home or two and potentially getting the chance to knock out could be the Celtics, could be the Heat. And if you lose the play-in tournament, guess what? You're still in the lottery anyways. Before you scoff, play-in tournament. I can hear you scoffing. Play-in tournament. Think about the West. If the season ended today, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Ja Morant would all be in the play-in tournament, and there's a chance that Zion could be there too, but the Pelicans are fading faster than me in the marathon that I was talking about earlier. Sounds like a little bit more fun than rooting for lottery balls to move up, I don't know, three spots? But who am I? The girl's damn sugar.
First things first.
All right, the Vancouver Canucks continued their storybook return with yet another come-from-behind win against the division-leading Toronto Maple Leafs. A week ago, this seemed less likely than a good Mark Davis haircut. But the Canucks' two straight wins have them 8 points back of the Habs with four games in hand.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Seems somewhat fitting to have Lloyd Christmas and Mark Davis in the same paragraph, doesn't it? Oh, doctor. But as the days go on, Lloyd Christmas, I'm telling you, there's a chance. It absolutely had to start the way it did for the Canucks. But now, as the Habs get set to face the Oilers with Carey Price on the shelf, the thing that was just a week ago, Pashad, is gathering steam. Listen, 19 games in 32 days was and always is going to be tougher than Gino Ogic, no matter how you slice it. But, if the Habs happen to lose in regulation tonight, the Canucks would only be 8 points back with five games in hand. And they are staring down a schedule that pesky sends aside sees them play the only two teams lower than them in the standings for the next five games. And God forbid they win a couple of those. The momentum of the moment might start to feel like fate. And as Charlie Murphy once said, belief is a hell of a drug. Okay, so maybe it wasn't belief that he said. But you get my point. Now, if only they could take the Leafs goaltending with them. I'm not the only one who said it. The head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Sheldon Keefe, after last night.
I'm concerned about our goaltending, obviously. You know, we got to get that sorted out, but I'm not concerned about our team. I believe in our group, and We played well enough to win here tonight. We played well enough to win the other night. You know, but we got to get better goaltending to give our group confidence here.
Listen, don't get this twisted. I still think that the Leafs are the most talented and deep team in the North. But last time I checked, goaltending was relatively important and the very reason why some suggested that despite the Leafs' talent, they were still vulnerable. And despite panic among the Leaf fan base, or at least some that I can feel, the Leafs, against all your instincts, should probably stick with Riddick and Hutchinson and ride it out. Hear me out. I mean, have some confidence in your talent, and most of all, make bloody well sure Jack Campbell and Frederik Andersen are as healthy as they can possibly be for the playoffs. Because what you've just figured out, if you are the Leafs, is that you're going to need one or both of them. I mean, what the hell does first or second or third in the division really mean? If you're Toronto, you've been there. You've done that before. I'm pretty sure there's something else you need, like a bleeping playoff win. And if the standings bear out as they are right now, 1-4 would net you Carey Price in the first round, presuming that he is healthy. And if you move on, 1-2 right now in the standings, bear with me, Edmonton, right now in the standings, gets you Connor Hellebuyck. That along with, I don't know, the entire history of the National Hockey League playoffs tells you that you're going to need goaltending. So if you're the Leafs, you better get comfortable with your goaltending, or we may see a familiar film when it matters most. Still got time to figure it out and slay those demons of the past. But if you don't, it could be a really interesting offseason in Toronto.
First things first.
All right, Jesse, you live in the city of Toronto.
I do.
Is it palpable? Listen, Jerry D was on here saying that this was a media fabrication about the Leafs' worries after 4 in a row. 5 in a row last night. I don't think this is the fabrication of the media. It feels like some people are nervous. And listen, if you hadn't won since 1967, I get it.
John and John were giggling at one of the goals last night that David Riddick allowed against the Canucks. Like, it was that bad. The puck was going a foot wide. I think this is a serious issue for the Leafs and their fans right now. You could not be in a worse position with your goaltending. You don't know when Freddie Anderson's coming back. Jack Campbell's had 4 or 5 stinkers in a row now. David Riddick last night, I mean, the team has no confidence in him at the moment.
But this is, hold on. So stopping the Freddie Anderson for a second. Do you believe that he's still hurt? Because, like, we don't really know what's wrong with them, right? Like, they haven't been clear on what's going on here. Right. And there would have to be some cap manipulation for him to come back. And what, maybe not last year, but what was the criticism at the end of the Leafs' first round series in the first two seasons that Freddie was here? That he was tired.
Good enough, yeah.
Right? That he was tired and that he wasn't good enough in those series. I think he played 66 games in each. So rest him. Make sure he's healthy. Maybe get him a game or two before. And I don't think you should be worried if you're a Leaf fan.
But are you going to take a sigh of relief until you see him and how he performs?
There's no relief for any Leaf fan until you win a first-round series.
And we just said it. He hasn't been good enough in the playoffs during his Leaf career. So what, he's going to come back and play 2 games in the regular season? He could stand on his head in those 2 games. But are you still going to have confidence rolling with him?
But you're not. What I'm saying is you're not going to have confidence, period, until you win
absolutely
that first-round series. Like, God forbid the Leafs lose the first game of the first round.
Yeah.
Like, this city will be up in arms.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't want to think about that at the moment, just for the city's sake.
And to be fair.
Been through enough.
To be fair, I do understand Leaf fans. Like, if you hadn't won, like, if you're a generation of Leaf fans, like, my age or younger, your best moments are what, like, conference championships?
I think you might have just answered the question you had off the top with who is the most tortured fan base.
Probably.
Might have just done it right there.
Yeah, probably. All right. Before we move on, I want to address something. And yesterday we planned another sports show to distract you from the hardships of our time, to help you smile or get lost in a debate, as we always do. But in the midst of our first segment, real life, punched us in the mouth again when the Derek Chauvin trial verdict was delivered. And statements began to roll in while we were live on the air. And part of me wanted to do more, and part of me knew that we didn't have time allotted to do it the justice it deserves, which it was fitting. And just to pull the curtain back, when that happens, sometimes I feel like I don't want to be a part of what can feel like a disingenuous discussion just to say you had it. Because that's the last thing I've ever wanted to be, or by extension, this show to be, is disingenuous, fake, or phony. And as those statements began to pour in, all I could think of, to be honest, was I hope everyone knows that we've been here from time, and that one statement would not define me or us in a moment. And as I read through those statements, it began to feel like while there were some that were heartfelt and genuine, some felt that way, others fell way short of the mark in an attempt to say something they thought they were supposed to say. I never want to be that. I don't want to ever feel like we are a part of that. And I hope that we have proven that this show, in all of its incarnations, isn't that. That we will have the conversation no matter how tough. But just in case, I will reiterate. I think having sports stop and make statements, even if they are fake, is important because it creates a standard for which we can hold those who are just here for the optics of being here accountable in the future. And that, unfortunately, is actually a step. And to me, that's what yesterday was about, a step. It wasn't a conclusion. It was a step in a journey that has been entirely too long. George Floyd lost his life over a fake $20 bill. And the problem is, he's not the only one with a story. There's no justice in yesterday's decision. Just what I hope is accountability. And the accountability isn't just for the justice systems across the United States, Canada, or for the world to see. It's for us too, to prove that we are taking steps forward towards equality. I'm not smart enough to know if change is truly on its way. I'm not stupid enough to think that we're already there. I just hope that we're moving forward. I've said it before, I will say it again. Don't be distracted by professionals trying to throw smoke bombs into the mix and tell you to look over there or over here or over there in an attempt to deviate from the ask. The ask is equality. Nothing to be afraid of or even concerned by. Just equality. And if you aren't for equality, you're on the wrong side of history. Once again, for those in the back, if you aren't for equality, you're on the wrong side of history. Now back to what we do. We edutain. Dan Shulman of the Jays and Red Sox. He'll be calling the game tonight. Jays have lost three straight, aren't hitting, and have a ton of arms on the injured list. Other than that, everything's fine. Also, Mike Feuda on the way. Ken Reed probably has his trophy. I think I just spit. Hope you didn't see it. He'll join us for the rest of the show after the break. That's right, kids. Tim and Friends Hump Day. Let's go.
And Bogaerts lifts it to left field. It is deep. It's gone. Bogaerts into the monster seats for a three-run homer.
Tanner Pearson, and he comes with a shot, scores.
You just can't have a goal like that go in, especially at such a critical time.
The rebound available. Oh, what a save! Rask dives across and steals one from Dylan Cousins.
We do know you are a football fan. Do you have any thoughts on the Super League and what happened?
I like it the way it is.
I'm now going to attack to shoot frozen pucks into the lava.
It's called Tim and Friends. It is edutainment, or at least we hope. This, though, is unprecedented in the time of Tim and Friends. 90-minute show, we are going one friend. But if we were going to go one friend, it might as well be the dude that once dressed up like me, or at least more than once. The author and owner of many leather-bound books, Sir Kenneth Reed.
Tim, how are you?
You're probably wondering why I have this book at this angle. I was just reading the praise for some of my work on the back of cover of my book, One Night Only.
And it wasn't Sid Sixero in high school.
No, it wasn't. It was not. I dress up like you a lot, just occasionally at work. So yeah, that was fun. Just let me get some of my books out of the way here.
Who wrote the praise on the back of the book? Like, what? Oh, I can't one? Tease me on that one.
Oh, Millard, Mick Kern, Lance Hornby, and this one, Phil Esposito, Stephen Brunt, Wendell Clark.
Oh, nice.
Denny Savard. Name dropping. I always go to Brunt, right? That's my first go-to. Brunt writes so well. And
can
he's,
you do me? Can
he's kind of like our hero.
Are we buying the Canucks storybook right now?
Yeah, why not, man? It's a nice little story. It's good news. I've been waiting for some good news. Classified, right? Great tune last summer, a couple summers ago. That's good stuff. I know you like your Canadian rap.
Yeah.
Your Canadian hip-hop.
East Coaster,
yeah. So I think it's a fantastic story. I think it's an absolutely fantastic story. And it came at the expense of the Leafs. And what was your question? The most what fan base?
Tortured fan base.
In Canadian sports?
Yeah.
Leafs and Expos. No doubt about it.
Yeah, Expos. I didn't even think about the Expos. Man.
Yeah, I always think about the Expos.
And they still exist for many, right?
Oh, yeah, they exist for me, absolutely. I think, and you mentioned it last block, and why I think the Leafs fan base is so tortured, and why I think it's hilarious. They released a VHS commemorative tape of losing in the Campbell Conference Finals in 1993, was it?
Passion yeah. Returns?
The Passion Returns.
Yes. Exactly.
No disrespect to anybody on that team, but is it really worthy of a VHS tape?
I was just saying before, and I can't believe I'm going to say this because I was just accused of being a Leafs homer, but before we came up on the show, I said, imagine the New York Yankees celebrating an ALCS team.
Yeah, it'd be like...
It would never happen.
It'd be like coming on a national sports program with a juvenile championship trophy you won in golf in 1990 at a small rural Nova Scotia golf club.
Right. But the way the Canucks... And listen, they're not going to take David Riddick with them. They're not taking the Leafs goaltending with them. But the way the Canucks went about it, like down 2-0 in that first game, you figured the jam was done.
Oh, yeah.
It was me pumping tires. There was a couple people suggesting, it might be a great story if the Canucks won a few coming back in this return to play. But you get two, and now you faced five in a row, Calgary, and then four straight against Ottawa.
Ottawa's not easy now, though.
No, and I love the way they play. But if you were to line it up, let's be honest, Ottawa would
That's
be among the teams that you would line up.
I guess the strange thing is they don't go head-to-head against Montreal for the rest of the season. I guess that's the one thing you'd want if they wanted to be in total control. But
right.
For me, again, I was totally wrong. I mean, I thought you'd see guys going up against the Canucks at the start of a night going, okay, no hitter tonight, right? We won't take it too bad on you. But, man, they got some jam. It's a great, great story. And if I'm Travis Green, I'm trying to renegotiate and get that deal right now, right? His deal's up at the end of the season.
Which
good time
is
to
ridiculous.
Go into the office, right?
Yeah, I would walk down right now. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
You going to let me go after this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Come on.
So, yeah, it's a fantastic story in a time where we don't have a lot of good stories. This is a good story, and I don't care if you're a Canucks fan or not. You got to dig it.
I'm with you. I was going to go to Carey Price, but Mike Fiuta, mm-hmm. former assistant GM of the Kings, is going to join us next. He's going to go to Carey Price.
You
know,
I have a bromance, eh?
I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard
bromance going on there.
You publicize said bromance?
I don't mind. Me and Fuchs, Colby. I think it would be a great 1980s television sitcom. You know, the three of us sharing an apartment. Somebody could be our landlord. Maybe you. You could make cameos, stuff like that. You break the fourth wall and address the camera.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Roper used to do.
I was going
to
say Ralph Furley, but same thing.
Yeah. Ralph Furley, man, that guy was styling.
Like, oh, Ralph Furley is a great
character.
He had
the best clothes.
How many people watching, right? Jesse, do you know who Ralph Furley is?
No idea.
You know what, Jesse? I can tell you what, Jesse. I could care less because I do it for me. And I make my references for me.
Understood. It's just a 40-year-old. They still play Three's Company?
I'm going to... Well... I'm going to look him up right now.
No. Have you ever seen the show Three's Company?
I've never watched Three's Company.
Well, it's still on.
Yeah.
It is quality. Do you know John Ritter?
No.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
You should watch. Anyone out there, it's still on. Three's Company. It's worth it.
You talk about edutainment. I mean, if you're ever a little shy around the ladies, right? And you need some advice, you just sit back and wait for a Larry episode. Strolls into the Regal Beagle, right?
That explains Ken Reed's persona right there.
I kind of look like Furley, too, don't I?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, check out Three's Company. That's one thing that you can learn from Tim and friends.
Hey, Jesse, when the show's over, come and knock on my door, will you?
Oh, I know that. He doesn't even get that jingle.
He'll be waiting for you.
Yeah, I know that jingle. I just haven't watched it, but I'm Wikipedia.
No, that's
right
fine.
Now.
You're representing like probably 50% of our audience.
I'm going to draw a line in the sand.
Okay.
I'll give you that you haven't watched Three's Company.
Okay.
I'll get that.
Yeah.
This is where it stops being fun, though. You were born in what year?
88.
88. Okay. In 88, this television show was tearing it up on Canadian television. It continued probably a little after 1988 as well.
Okay. Ken seems like he's saying this from the gut right now.
Please tell me.
Oh, God.
That you've witnessed the genius of Donnelly Rhodes as Dr. Grant Roberts in Danger Bay.
not a chance. I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of that before. Three's Company, I've heard of. I've never heard of Danger Bay before.
Danger Bay is one of the greatest Canadian shows of all time. It's about a man who works at an aquarium, and every episode ends with him punching someone in the face and then hugging his children in a freeze frame.
7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, so I'm going to have to check it out.
10.1 out of 10.
Danger Bay.
10.1 out of 10 on this
six
IMDb.
Seasons.
Danger Bay was good, or was it just Canadian? Come on, Kenny.
Buddy, Danger Bay.
I don't know.
Every episode ends with a doctor knocking someone out and hugging his children in a freeze frame. That is all you want in 1980s television. Combines violence, love, and an aquarium.
Hey, listen,
what more can you ask for?
That's the time of MacGyver, too, and that was an awful show
that
people thought was good.
Listen to this. This is a show about an aquarium.
Okay.
It's based on the West Coast.
Yeah. It's a show.
The girl who played Nicole, you know what her real first name was?
Nicole.
Ocean.
Oh, right.
She showed up to audition for the part.
That's not where I thought that was going.
I'm here for the audition of the part of the young girl who lives beside the Pacific Ocean in British Columbia. What's your first name? Ocean. Got the part.
If I had to watch one, which one? Three's Company or Danger Bay?
Well, it's two very different things. It's two very different things.
It's Three's Company by a landslide for me. Like, I don't get the... if you're going Canadian TV, nothing beats Beachcombers, okay?
It's two very different things, okay? Danger Bay is high drama on the open seas. And Three's Company, it's usually about a misunderstanding.
You might have to write a book about it.
Right, yeah, write a book about it, and then maybe we'll get there. Listen, I want to get to this, and we don't have a ton of time, as always.
Probably because I just ate 5 minutes.
Ate 5 minutes with Danger Bay, but it was a good explanation on Danger Bay. One of the things that popped up on the internet, and this is dangerous to do, but before
nice.
The show...
dangerous to do, I like that.
I'll go down and I'll see what's going on. And Robin Leonard was making some noise.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of different angles to the Robin Leonard, and I really wanted to hear it. So one of the producers pulled the clip. Would you like to listen to what Robin Leonard had to say about the situation regarding vaccines, the NHL, and the difference between the divisions?
Yes, I would.
Here's Robin Leonard, who, if you remember, has a little bit of a past.
Mm-hmm.
He's battled addiction, and he's also battled mental health in his past. And here's what he had to say about what the NHL is asking of their players right now.
I feel like responsibility to say something here for myself and for other people throughout the league. And I understand that I will have haters and whatnot, no matter what stand on the subject I am on these things. But they told me yesterday that they're surveying all the teams to see who has taken the vaccine and who has not taken the vaccines. And they're not going to change their rules for us as players until all the teams have have the vaccines at the same time. So it's not a competitive edge. And that made me go crazy, to be honest. It was a lie to our face that do this and you will get this, and now it's not happening because of competitive edge. Where was competitive edge for Vancouver Canucks when they wanted, three and a half weeks to get one practice and play the best team, one of the best teams in the league in Toronto? What was it, like two games and three nights afterwards, what they had planned? Don't talk to me about competitive edge. This is human lives, and people are struggling with this stuff a lot in society, and we are humans as everyone else. We are vaccinated and we're still going to be trapped in a prison. And I can talk about myself being a bipolar 1 It's been hard. I'm not saying it's hard for me or anyone else, but one of the biggest things for being bipolar, they tell you not to do, is isolation. I know people will say, oh, you're millionaires and this and that, you're crying. What about these guys? We care about that too, man. No matter what people think, this is a society problem, but when government, corporations, NHL, whoever are taking decisions in terms of these irrelevant things like competitive edge over the human being, it's not okay, man.
Your reaction to hearing that?
Amen.
Yeah.
As a reporter, as a fan, when I ask a player a question, all I want is an honest, heartfelt answer, whether I agree with it or not. I just happen to agree with all that. That was great. Your health is your most important thing. When it comes to games and scores, who really cares at the end of the day? That is well said by Robin Leonard. Salute him.
And the analogy to the Vancouver Canucks and acting like you're caring about competitive balance, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. we've seen that in every sport mm-hmm. where it's been so. The same with the Raptors being fined $25,000 for resting players after playing 7 games in like 9 nights out of COVID.
Yeah.
Some of which they played with 8 players. Like, it's ridiculous.
If there's one thing I think that's been proven over the last year, it's that we don't know what we're doing. We're going day by day. Right. Some things work, some things don't work. Nobody knew what the heck was going on when we went into this. And we're learning from mistakes. We're getting better in some places, and in some places we're getting worse. But to me, that was heartfelt. It was fantastic. And Robin Leonard just spoke what was in his heart. And his mind. Yeah. And we need more of that. That was great.
Here's what happens in 2021, too. He said the prison part. Mm-hmm. And people grabbed that. And they went with the prison part. Mm-hmm. Saying, you make millions of dollars.
Right, right.
And listen, are we that dumb that we can't separate one word from the rest of what he said?
Well, here's the problem is we live in a world where you and I... You know, we came up through the old journalism route, right? We had journalistic ethics and things like that. Anybody can blog. Anybody can tweet anything. So you can take any little snippet. Now, does some media do that? Probably.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. But any good, resourceful media outlet is not going to take that out of context. However, once you put it out there, people can choose to take it in whatever context they choose. And... Look, there's not a lot of responsibility when it comes to the online world and taking whatever snippet of a clip you want. So what Robin Leonard said was fantastic because it meant COVID and mental health do not care how much money you have. They could care less. Right. And nobody wants to sit in a room alone all day, whether you are a billionaire or you don't have
I think this might get sorted out. And listen, I wouldn't mind getting through some of the tweets that he sent after with Jesse. We'll try and fit that in later on. But let me just say, like, I think that the NHL will hear what Robin Leonard said just as they heard what Bo Horvat said.
Yep.
Or excuse me, JT Miller said.
JT Miller, yeah.
And they will rectify the situation because he's right.
He's right. And when Miller said that, he was right too. And it's nice to see guys in the NHL actually speak out because usually it's a toe-the-line kind of league. So this is good to see.
All right, Dan Shulman coming up shortly. We'll talk Jays and their problems. But up next, Mike Fiuta joins Ken and I as we keep the hockey talk going. No Carey Price for a week. How worried should Habs fans be? Montreal in Edmonton tonight. We will tee it up with Futsy. It's just what I call it. Next, Tim and Friends.
Should I move my books off the set now?
Welcome back. I think I might be in the way of a little bromance this segment as Ken Reed and I welcome former Kings assistant GM Mike Fiuta into the conversation. Futsy, welcome back. Is it Ken came out and he literally said the bromance is alive and well. Like, I don't know. He's publicizing it. It's publicly publicized. I don't know if you can...
Publicly
publicized? Yeah, unpublicly publicize anything.
It's out there, and I'm not one to deny it. I mean, I had a Ralph Furley moment while I was just listening to him go on. I visited my parents last night, and they had my first trophy out. It's just like, it's a bowling trophy, my first trophy, so it's not quite as big as Ken's. But, we've hit it off. Great chemistry.
Oh, yeah. Well, you won the two, really. One trophy like you won it twice. It's really cool. You can drink out of yours. I tried drinking out of this last week. It was somewhat successful, which was strange. But listen to it, Fuchs. Does the Stanley Cup make this sound? You ready?
Careful. Careful.
Your bones do the next morning after the party. Yeah. That's a tough one. Watch that. That might not make through. But I honestly was going to hold up my picture with the two cups just to try and offset your book tour there. But
yeah.
I didn't want to throw you under.
Thanks, buddy.
I want to talk a little bit about Carey Price with you because he's lost for what we're hearing is a week, but we're not sure because when you suffer a head injury, we're never sure. The question I have is, and maybe for both of you, why the hell is that not a penalty?
It gets right back to protecting the stars. I mean, it should have been a penalty. I mean, I can't figure it out. I can't figure out some of these calls. I mean, I still could. I mean, I can't figure out the response. I mean, that's definitely a handicap. What are you going to do? I mean, it's not a nice judgment call. That's clear, direct contact with the head. And again, there's one of our star players. You got a team, and now that's the guy everybody was getting on count, getting hot. Now he's on the shelf.
See, here we go with the bromance. When you're looking for a bromance with someone, usually you like to have things in common, things you can relate to. And Futsi, you said it, buddy, the response. When in the National Hockey League did it become acceptable for somebody to even touch your goalie or go near him and for everyone on your team to just go like this and do nothing? Maybe a little touch with the stick. Back in the day, if Alex Chiasson does this to Carey Price, intentionally or not, he's eating a fist or two. He gets a little tap there, and there's no penalty. So I get it. Now you could say, okay, I'm not going to hit him because there'll be a penalty on the play, and I don't want to risk that. But there's not even that. So when did hockey change where you can just run my goalie over?
Well, it's there's some teams, the teams that usually win the cup, it hasn't changed. And I honestly, because I know the Leafs have made a concerted effort, and I don't want to get off topic, but when the other night it just killed me when Hyman, who's been their most consistent player, takes a knee and everybody's kind of standing around like, hey, we got a 5-minute power play. You're going to be possibly playing these teams in the playoffs. You've got to send a message that you cannot take advantage of one of our family. And family's not just about being great in the dressing room. It's about standing up for each other. If somebody steps in there and takes care of business, okay, you're going to kill that penalty off. And if you don't, it doesn't matter because the proper message has been sent.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I told Kenny when he was here a couple of weeks ago that I thought that the Leafs would eventually dress Scott Sabourin, a face puncher. And they did because Milan Lucic hit Austin Matthews from behind. If the NHL is not good, they're going to nullify the goal.
Right.
If they're not going to assess a penalty to Chiasson for hitting the goalie, they understand that the boys will probably sort it out on the ice tonight, don't they?
I believe they do. Most of the guys that work in that office, and that's a really tough job. That's the way they played. That's the era that they came up in. So I don't think they're against that. I certainly don't think they're I mean, the clean hit that's followed by a fight, I have a problem with. I don't like the premeditated stuff. I know that Reeder and I disagree a little bit with that off the draw and stuff like that for momentum. But when one of your players, especially a star player, takes a hit like that to his head, when you're sitting there, you're a team that hasn't had a real good run of success here, the Montreal Canadiens, and your bread and butter takes a shot like that, I don't care who you are. I mean, you've got to get involved. And it doesn't matter if it costs you a penalty or the old days, oh, we don't want to get the 2, 5, and 10. Mm. Well, that's BS because that's the kind of thing that's going to allow a team to feel totally different and totally comfortable about playing you in a playoff series. And the thing about this Canadian division, the Leafs, I'm firmly convinced that Wayne Simmons has a bad hand, so that's tough on him. But some of these teams are built. I guarantee you that Nick Foligno, that'll be addressed when Nick Foligno's in the lineup. There's very few players that still do that anymore, but they're invaluable.
Take the penalty and kill it. I asked for a piece of video. I hope the guys have it. And this piece of video, it blows my mind. Now, this was Riddick's first game with the Leafs. He'd flown with the Flames from Calgary. Okay, sorry, we don't have it. But maybe it was in fun, but I don't care if it's in fun. And Matthew Tkachuk, and I love Matthew Tkachuk, and I love that he did this because he could get away with it. He blatantly snowed David Riddick. Yeah, just blatantly snowed him. And no one on the Leafs did a thing. Like, it's just this disconnect, I guess, from the hockey I grew up watching and what happens today. But if the ref's not going to give Tkachuk the two-front sportsman, like, what do you, like, what do you, letting happen here? And plus, if you keep away guys from the blue paint with the threat of a stick in the chops, you know, maybe that'll cut down on goals one day.
No, there are certain players, again, that I just find invaluable, and they get it. And it doesn't mean they're dirty players. Doesn't mean they don't respect the game anymore. But again, there is too much. I mean, there's another video from that game as well where Riddick skated past them and kind of Riddick bumped him.
He had a good throw. Yeah.
I didn't know whether he was being competitive or whether he was saying, hey, I hope everything was great on the flight. Like, you never know anymore. I mean, Riddick looked like he was very competitive a few weeks back when he got pulled and headbutted the wall. But, I mean, this is a time where some of these teams, and I know they've been playing each other often, somebody has to set a standard here for you're not going to want to play us come playoff time.
Well, but there's the balance, and there's the rub on all of this, is that we all know might not be face punching, drop the gloves, two guys square off at center ice, but you know the team that wins in the postseason is usually the one that you make pay for going anywhere near your goal. Like, all that stuff is done in the postseason by the good teams. Like, everything that you're talking about playing heavy, about making sure that nothing is free, even if it's just, you know, an ice shower to the goalie. Yeah. But that's the way the playoffs are played, and that's what strikes me about this, is are you going to be able to flip the switch and play that way if you're a team like the Leafs or the Habs?
I mean, I think that's where a guy like Foligno is going to be, because, again, he's coming in. He doesn't have a contract next year. I think something's going to happen to him. It doesn't need to, but when he pulls a Toronto Maple Leaf jersey on for the first time, there's going to be a lot of people held accountable in the own room as well as the opposition. Mm-hmm. And I think it's critical. I mean, when we used to play, when we were making our runs for the Cup, you look at the schedule, and if you saw that we were playing the Anaheim Ducks or the San Jose Sharks with 2 weeks left in the season, you better buckle up, because because honestly, in the playoffs, that's not where you want to be sending messages. Okay. It's in the regular season, especially where it's not that important. You clearly have a playoff spot where somebody, you know, and you don't have to be stupid about it, but you have to make teams answer the bell, hold them accountable. Now, when it's regular season, you're playing to each other four times in a row. And again, this isn't going back to the 70s, you know, primitive hockey. This is just, you have teammates, hold your opponents accountable, and it's got to be done with, it can be done with a clean check. It can be done with a fight. Mm-hmm. But don't just sit back and look at the ref and say, I hope you give us a five. Particularly the way the Leafs power play has been lately. Like, the last thing they need is a 5 minute.
There's nothing more disheartening as a hockey fan seeing five guys kind of hold each other and one of them looking at the ref. There's a reason I don't like soccer, okay? And I can't stand it. Another thing that ticks me off is about the fighting in the regular season, and people will say, well, you don't have to, there's no fighting in the playoffs. You got to get there. You got to establish who you are in the regular season. And it's a few, is it not a long way to get through the regular season? And sometimes you got to, like you said, make a statement and let guys know who you are as a team.
And I think it's such a grind, and that's under regular circumstances. Like, you see these teams that aren't in this Canadian division, the way they're competing. I mean, you saw the Boston guy. There's guys that are just, they're playing for real, for keeps, and they're setting the tone because they know it's not going to be this type. There might be one game in your series, in a playoff series, if the score gets away from you, that there's a few messages delivered. But other than that, it's critical. Discipline is critical. But right now, I mean, whether you're in a bubble, whether you're going through, you know, tough times away from your family or not, this is where you have to stand up for your teammates and set a tone.
Matthew Beardsley writes in during that very passionate conversation and says, let's rank the top five Canadian TV shows of all time. I'll start. Number one, Littlest Hobo. Number two, Beachcombers. Number three, King of Kensington. Number four, Degrassi Junior High. Number five, Ken Reed, Danger Bay.
Futes, your top five Canadian TV shows of all time. On the spot, baby.
Holy smokes. David Suzuki.
Yeah, Nature of Things, okay.
I love the King of Kensington because I call my mom the King of Kensington. That was a dude. That was
Al Waxman.
Al Waxman. I'm going to have to pop out. Degrassi. SCTV. I'm sorry. I'm not a Danger SCTV. Bay guy.
Okay, he got Degrassi.
Oh, Second City, running away.
Come on.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we're done and you're done, Futsy. We've run out of time here.
Futes, thanks. Number one, Tim and Friends. Then Degrassi Junior High. Then Danger Bay. Oh.
Him and friends. Holy, was I unprepared for that question.
Yeah. Then Littlest Hobo.
Kenny, we got to go.
And then Sportsnet Central, but only Monday to Wednesday.
Curling? What about the Grand Slam of Curling? You've left out the Grand Slam of Curling.
Once again, I was thinking about me.
The Play On Players Championship coming up. Sportsnet West and 360, you are going there. Coming up next, we talk Jays with Dan Schulman. Thank you, Mike Fiuta.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Back after this.
Talk with Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show.
Hey, that friend is Kenny Reed. That's right. Thank you, Sheepdogs, back for 30 more minutes on Tim and Friends. And Ken Reed, entire show in studio. You've been a great friend of the show. We appreciate you doing this.
Happy to be here. Shanks a lot, buddy. Shanks a lot.
Is that your line in on golf course?
Shanks a lot? Yeah. No, it's just...
Okay.
Yeah, it's just all something right. I say.
Maritama Shanks
time.
A lot?
No, it's something I say time to time for the last 12 hours.
We are done at 6:30 Eastern. Blue Jays Central coming your way ahead of the Jays and the Red Sox. Danny Schulman will join us in just a few minutes, but let's get you caught up to date on what else is going on in the world of sports. One game on the ice in the North tonight. It is the Oilers hosting the Canadiens on Sportsnet West regionally and, of course, Sportsnet now. John Merrill and his mullet are out of quarantine and will make their Habs debut. The Oilers dominated the back half of their matchup on Monday, winning 4-1, and the Habs are now looking over their shoulders a wee bit at the Canucks. So Josh Anderson expects a high-intensity game tonight. Kenny Reeder.
I think tonight's going to be a battle for both teams. I think it's going to be a good hockey game to watch and play. I think it's going to be a really competitive, physical, emotional hockey game tonight. We all know what's at stake, and we're going to treat tonight like a playoff game. And, throughout, the last 9 or 10 games, however games we have left, we've really got to treat them like a playoff game, and we got to start playing harder and meaner and really coming in and treating it like business, like style. So it's going to be tough on the opponent, just to try to play against us. We don't want them to think any night's going to be easy against us. So that's going to be our mindset for tonight.
I knew that was going to be a Kenny Reeder.
Have you heard I have a hockey crush on Josh Anderson?
Yep.
He is my favorite. Bad news, Women's World Hockey Championships canceled. The tournament was set to start 2 weeks from tomorrow in Halifax and Truro, Nova Scotia. The decision was made by the province of Nova Scotia due to safety concerns over COVID-19. This from IIHF President Rene Fassel. This is very disappointing news to receive with just a few weeks until the tournament was to begin. We strongly believe that we had the adequate safety measures in place to protect players, officials, spectators, and all residents in Halifax and Truro. Based on the IIHF and Hockey Canada's experiences from hosting the IIHF World Junior Championship in Edmonton, our release also says the IIHF and Hockey Canada hope to still have the event later this year if it's safe to do so.
Maybe just go somewhere else. The CFL has officially pushed back their schedule to start the season in a release sent out by Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. He said that we will play football in 2021. Now, the league announced a revised target start date of August 5th with a 14-game schedule and a Grey Cup date of December 12th in Hamilton. Of course, everything is pending health and safety and some major caveats in that announcement.
Timmy, the Raps have to stop winning. What are they doing? They're going to go for their fourth win in a row tonight. They'll host Brooklyn down in Tampa, and they get Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby back for tonight. I don't know. Kevin Durant, James Harden out for the Nets. Raptors start the night a half game back. The Wizards and Bulls for the final play-in spot.
They have to, otherwise they'll get fined.
That's true.
We're 3 months away from the start of the Summer Olympics, we think.
Yeah, we think.
In Tokyo. And today, the draw was held for the women's soccer tournament involving our Canadian women who have done well over the last two Olympics. Canada is drawn into a group with England, Japan, and Chile. Canada ranked 8th in the world, England 6th, Japan 11th, and Chile 37th. Now, top two teams in each group plus two best third place finishers qualify for the quarterfinals. So it sounds like Canada, to avoid a tough matchup, would have to beat England or Japan. Netherlands and Brazil are favorites in Group F, while Group G is a doozy. USA, Sweden, Australia, and New Zealand. Sweden beat the U.S. on penalties in the 2016 Olympics.
Jays finish up their mini two-game set at Fenway tonight. Trent Thornton gets a start for the Jays. Bullpen kind of game. Thornton's the 10th different starter for the Jays this year. That's a lot. Garrett Richards goes for the AL East leading Red Sox. That's crazy,
also
too.
Crazy.
We'll have it for you, 6:30 Eastern, bottom of the clock right here on Sportsnet, as the radio people like to say. Dan Shulman's going to join us in a second as well. And changes to the Blue Jays lineup tonight. Kevin Biggio is going to bat leadoff. Marcus Semien down into the sixth spot. And Biggio's batting 156.
Yeah, that's an interesting spot for a guy batting.
Leadoff guy. Yeah, right. Rowdy Tellez is going to clean up. So is Charlie Montoyo panicking, it says here? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
He's shuffling for sure.
You know, for some reason, we are slow starters. For some reason, that's why you don't see me panicking, because I know the guys are going to hit. You know, we lost some players and we lost a lot of people, but I still believe that we have enough to win games with what we have right now. And I believe the Vigio and Semien and all those guys are going to hit, you know. And what I like about our situation right now, our pitching is doing a good job and it's keeping us in the game. And pitching is the name of the game. If we keep pitching like that, whenever we get hot, we're going to be all right.
With Trent Thornton. All right, if we can't get to Fenway to tee it up, let's get as close as we can by bringing in the man calling the game tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Now, ladies and gentlemen, the lovely and talented Dan Shulman.
That's the dictionary definition of a smattering of applause.
It is a smattering.
That's golf applause, Dan. Golf applause.
Very good. Danny, I said earlier I'm having problems slowing the old cranium down from the sprint of last year and reminding myself this is a marathon. Yep. But it just kind of feels like the old golf adage here. You can't win it early, but you can lose it. Are the Jays just trying to hang around 500 till they get healthier? Is that what we're doing here?
That's kind of how I feel about it, is just keep your heads above water. And I don't know that anybody's great in the American League East. Boston looks like they're better than people thought. The Yankees might not be as good as people thought. You know, Tampa Bay's going to be in the mix somewhere. Maybe you got a four-team race, no disrespect to the Orioles, over the course of the summer. But I'm with you, Tim. I think the key here is just stick around 500, as close to 500 as you can. Hopefully within the next week, you've got George Springer, Teoscar Hernandez, Tyler Chatwood, Jordan Romano. You get those four guys back. Now your lineup looks longer. Now your bullpen looks deeper. You know, further down the road, Nate Pearson, who knows? We all know all the guys that are injured. They got a tough schedule. This is a tough week, you know, with Boston and Tampa Bay. Then they host Washington and Atlanta. So I think you're right. Just keep paddling. Just keep swimming as hard as you can and try to stay near 500, get healthier, and then see where you're at in a few weeks.
I love the word we used to throw to that Charlie Montoyo clip. We said, is he panicking? Now, as fans, we panic, but from what I understand, nobody within the game panics. It's the ultimate just resting heartbeat. Dan, when is the last time you saw someone in the game of baseball panic? I don't think it ever happens, but what do
I do it about? I do it about 20 minutes before every broadcast.
There you go.
But Charlie is not a guy who panics. He's it's coming soon.
No, yeah.
They said they'd have me off before it happened. So, yeah. Charlie doesn't panic. I mean, he's been around the block a few times. And Charlie, like just about every manager I've ever talked to, they know if they show panic, then the players will panic. So like Biggio going up to the leadoff spot, there's no panic here. It's not like Simeon's hitting. It's as old as baseball itself. When things aren't working, juggle the lineup a little bit. Charlie said in his pregame Zoom, part of it is they're facing a righty in Richards, so they've got their three left-handed batters, 1, 4, and 7. There aren't a lot of great options right now, but you never know. And this could be a one-game thing, right? If Springer's back Friday, he's probably leading off Friday. Mm-hmm. So this could be just a one-game thing. We had a Zoom with Biggio, too, a couple of hours ago. He says he's in a good place. He says he's close and it's coming around and he feels confident. You know, you look at the numbers of Biggio, Jansen, Kirk, and Semien that you've got here. They've got to get better. You could throw Gurriel into the mix as well, right? Not all of them are probably going to get better, but some of them will get better. And with some of them getting better and Springer coming back and Teoscar coming back, it might take 2, 3, 4 more weeks. But eventually, obviously, this team is going to score more runs than they're scoring right now.
I think I hate to do this, but there's panic here. There's absolutely panic here. Joe Panic.
Yeah, you sure you want me to come back every Wednesday?
Were you surprised by Trent Thornton?
I don't know. I figure Anthony Kay, you know, fits in here somewhere. And whether it's Thornton to Kay or Kay to Thornton, it may just be, you know, look at the top of a typical Boston lineup and see what that lineup looks like. I would expect Thornton. I kind of looked at it. You know, the Red Sox have righties hitting first, third, and fourth. So, you know, maybe Thornton gets 13 batters. Maybe he goes through Bogarts the second time. And then a guy like Anthony Kay comes in to face Rafael Devers the second time. Thornton isn't completely, you know, stretched out. He can't go four or five innings. So I didn't see it as a big deal one way or another. I think some of it had to do with the kind of lineup that the Red Sox are putting out there. But Thornton, in whatever role he's going to have this year, is going to be important. And Anthony Kay, in whatever role he's going to have this year, is going to be important. Let's just hope we get it in. It is currently raining at Fenway Park, by the way, but it looks like they'll get the game in, but I don't think we're starting on time tonight.
I love advertising. I love promos because you got to read the fine print, right? Not an actual guarantee. So this was a team that was supposed to hit everything and they weren't supposed to be able to pitch, but right now they can't hit a lot, but they have the best ERA in the American League. Dan Schulman, please explain.
This might defy explanation. With eight pitchers on the injured list right now. So I think we've got to give them credit for the depth that they added because it's being tested. But guys like Anthony Castro and Joel Piamps are holding their own in the bullpen. And let's be honest, when the Steven Matz trade was made, I don't remember a lot of people saying, yeah, this is going to be great. And I remember a lot of people going to Baseball Reference and saying, a 968 ERA last year. And obviously they saw something. And Matz has been great. And I think you got to give a lot of credit to the pitching staff and to Pete Walker and to Matt Bushman for doing what they've done. I don't think it's 100% sustainable over the course of a 162-game season without some of the reinforcements coming back. And again, hopefully that starts with Romano and Chatwood in the next few days. But like everybody else, you know, we're just hoping Nate Pearson shows up at some point and that he can lend a hand in whatever role they decide is best for him.
During a couple of games in spring training, the guys were talking, I think it was Buck, talking about Pete Walker and just the importance of getting the ball over the plate because the Blue Jays, they used a lot of pitches per inning last year. What's changed as far as that philosophy goes?
I think it was really, you know, day one of spring training, as you said, Ken, that was the message. And I last looked at this, I think, two or three days ago. I believe they were 20th in baseball in walk percentage last year. Mm-hmm. And when I looked two or three days ago, they were fourth in baseball in walk percentage this year. That's enormous. Like, that's not a big move. That's an enormous change in one year with a lot of the same faces. And I think it was definitely something that needed to improve and definitely something that they made a priority in spring training. And Pete is great. I mentioned Anthony Castro. He did a Zoom yesterday and somebody asked him, you know, what's different here? Why are you having more success here? And he said, they're letting me be me. That, you know, they came to me and said, what do you like to throw? And we think you can throw this more. If you want to throw this more, do that. And I think there's an open-mindedness and kind of a, you know, a softer touch that Pete Walker has with pitchers. And it's really helping because they are doing well. You know, they're only 17 games into the season. I know everybody wants them to be more than 7-10. And I know I said, hey, this is a big couple of weeks. But again, they should get healthier and the lineup should get deeper. And this team is going to do better than it's doing right now. But the pitching has been a real pleasant surprise. Just keep Ryu healthy. Hope Matz keeps doing what he's doing. I think we all know now what the Robbie Ray experience is like. There are some ups and downs to it. But they just need a couple of other guys to step up, whether it's Pearson, whether it's Kay, whether it's Thornton. They just need a couple other guys to step up, and then I think they got the makings of a really nice staff.
All right, Dan Schulman joining us ahead of his call, hopefully, of the Jays and the Red Sox tonight. Which struggling bat should Jays fans be least concerned with because it feels like he might be turning a corner? Is there someone out there that you've seen maybe get some quality at bats? I mean, this shuffle of the lineup obviously is Charlie trying to change things up. Is there a guy that you've seen get some quality at bats that you think might be able to bust out?
I'm a believer in Rowdy Tellez, and I've said that a lot, so I'm going to stick with that. And he did start 0-21, and he's obviously done better since. The last seven or eight games, by and large, he's done well. I love it when he's in the lineup. I love it when he's in a key spot in the lineup, when he breaks up some of those right-handed bats. Biggio will do better. Gurriel will do better as well. But to me, he looks out of whack right now. You know, he's chasing a lot and he just doesn't, you know, he's a kind of a streaky hitter anyways. But if I had to pick one of those guys, I think I would pick Rowdy. I want to believe that Springer and Teoscar coming back puts everybody in a better spot when they don't have to do too much, where they don't have to feel they've got to, you know, carry the whole team, and that maybe that'll help as well. But if I had to pick one guy, I think it's Rowdy.
Quickly, Dan, we've been discussing it. Your all-time favorite Canadian TV show, and you can't say Knockout with Buck Martinez.
I can't. My all-time favorite. Well, when I was quarantining back in the fall, I binge-watched Schitt's Creek, and that was yeah. pretty good.
People were screaming at us to mention Schitt's Creek because we went.
Yeah, I'll take Schitt's Creek. Yeah, I'll take Schitt's Creek.
I should have said Schitt's Creek too, just because you can say that on TV and not get in
trouble. I know, isn't it great?
Yeah, exactly.
You get mad at me for saying douchebag earlier or last week sometime, and there you are saying Schitt's Creek.
Well, that's because you said it to me off camera.
Hey, if there was a show that word was in the title, you'd be totally fine. But I still think you're out of bounds.
Yeah. Hey, listen, they pushed the envelope and they were successful. Hopefully the rain stops so you won't be up Schitt's Creek. Thank you for doing this, Dan Shulman. What? We're allowed to say it.
That's a different way. That's a different one, isn't it, Dan?
That's totally fine.
Okay.
Totally fine.
All right. Appreciate it. Have
Great
fun,
to
Danny.
See you guys.
Hey,
thanks.
If I can redo my list.
I can't believe that you say it like three times, and then I turn it some different way. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Speaking of profanity, if I could redo my list, Trailer Park Boys is easily number one. Oh, seriously.
Man. Trailer Park Boys is up there.
By far.
Someone showed me, have you seen the meme of Doug Ford as Bubbles?
I have seen it, yeah.
Someone showed it to me or sent it to me, and my son saw it. And he said, "Who's that?" And I said, "Let me introduce you to Bubbles."
The sharpest guy in the park.
And then as soon as I said, "Let me introduce you to Bubbles," I said, "Maybe I shouldn't have pushed play on this."
Yeah.
And I pushed stop.
My kids have seen it.
12, 13, I don't know. Maybe I should have waited
a little.
Mine
are 8 and 6. Go ahead, please.
Will you stick around?
Yeah, for sure.
It's only like 15 more minutes. We'll do Last Call with Ken, Jesse. We might even get to our consensus list of the top Canadian TV shows.
Trailer Park Boys number
of all time. Next on Timberfriends.
You know where Bubbles is from, right?
Blue Jays baseball coming up, so we thought we'd get your whistle a little wet with the Giants and the Phillies. We start in the bottom of the second, two on for Mickey Moniak, and he takes Anthony DeScalfini opposite way. Three-run shot. The kid's got the ball. Other kid's got the ball. Other kid wants to eat the ball.
Understandable.
Other kid says, "This ball's no good," and then says, "I don't want it anymore."
Says it tastes like a baseball.
Oh, doctor. We've been told that they get the ball back. I can't confirm that. Either way, bottom of the seventh, Phillies down 5-4. Bryce Harper ties it up with a solo shot. He's fired up. Stay fired up. Bottom of the ninth, two on Andrew Knapp. Line drive. Here comes Harper. This'll win it. And being Bryce Harper, he just scoops down and touches the plate. 6-5, the final. Phillies, wag it off.
Wait, I've just been told in my ear, the kid got the ball back and did eat it. Okay, this is weird. The Diamondbacks and the Reds yesterday, they were tied at 4 in the 8th, and Lucas Sims into the game. It starts to rain, okay? Hits a batter, bases loaded. What's worse than rain, Tim? How about hail? Then it starts to hail. The game continues. Next batter, it's a walk. Sims just can't find the strike zone. In comes the go-ahead run. Ask the ump for a dry ball. Gets a new ball. No, not dry enough. Ask for another ball? No, ready? No, that's this ball? No, it's not. It's just not dry enough. The ump gives Sims every ball he has. Okay? Here, this dry enough for you? This dry enough for you? This dry enough for you? Evidently not, because eventually the manager, David Bell, comes to talk things over, and then Joe Thornton's worst nightmare comes true. You know what it is? Tarps come on.
All right.
Tarps on.
Yeah, Thornton's a tarps off kind of guy.
Yeah, he is. Game suspended. But the Reds down 5-4, so they resume today. But it's snowing. Okay, so you can't play in the snow, right? So then they wait for the snow.
Yep.
And it eventually stops snowing.
They played, hey!
And then, you know what? The D-backs bullpen takes care of business. No issues at all. Arizona, they win eventually 5-4.
Man, that took a while. Rangers and Angels from Anaheim. That means Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. Literally, Mike Trout down with OFP, a little opposite field power off Mike Fultonavich, 1-0 Angels, bottom of the third. Shohei Ohtani's time. Fastball. Goes around the same spot. This one, left-hander laced. Another solo shot, 2-0 LA. Now, back in the first inning, Justin Upton, caught looking at a low fastball for strike three, was not happy, pulls the Bo Jackson.
Bo Jackson.
Okay? And he didn't just take it out on that bat. He takes it out on this bat in the fourth inning. Watch what he does to this bat. Oh, doctor.
That's gone.
He hit it hard with the ball. 116.5 miles an hour off the bat. Hardest hit by any Angels player in the StatCast era. Pitch location, exact same spot where he struck out in his first at-bat. It's now 3-1 in the bottom of the seventh for the Angels.
Tim, I have news that will excite two distinct groups.
Okay.
Those groups are nerds and geeks.
Okay.
Because the Oakland A's are going for their 11th win in a row, so maybe we're talking Moneyball too, analytics nerds. Bottom two, Matt Olson, deep. Top three, Nelson Cruz, deep. How about we go bottom three and we go Matt Olson, deep? Because anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. Two-run shot, part of a four-run inning. Oakland goes up 7-4, but...
Can you sing that next time?
No.
Okay.
Here comes Cruz. Top six. Just deep enough. Just clears the wall.
I can do
better. Part of a three-run inning. Ties it at 7. Well, geeks, we'll have to see if the A's win.
Right.
It's all... Oh, no!
Oh, no.
Oh, the Twins are up 10-9, top 7.
Real pitcher's duo going on in Oakland.
What's going on?
Real pitcher's duo going on. Hey, you said two distinct groups.
Both nerds and geeks. I got that from Norm MacDonald. He did that in 95. I don't write my own stuff.
All right. And there were two distinct groups?
I think so.
I listened to Norm a lot. I never heard that.
That was on a weekend update. It was a joke.
That's what the kids call.
Yeah.
A joke. Yeah. All right.
By the way, you can't be offended by that joke because then you'll admit that you're a nerd or a geek. I was offended that. Then you know you're a nerd or a geek.
I've seen your pictures and.
Oh yeah, I was both. That picture might be in the system
nine,
there. Ivanka's.
Let's get the last call with Jesse Rubinoff and close out this show. We're off at 6:30 here. It's a little 90-minuter.
Tight.
All right, Jesse, what do you got for
us? We'll also throw it. New Philadelphia Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni is at a rough start to his tenure, to say the least. After his introductory news conference, many fans were questioning his intelligence. Mm-hmm. And it didn't help his cause today when he told reporters that during pre-draft Zoom interviews, he's been challenging prospects to games of rock, paper, scissors to gauge their competitiveness.
Huh? Rock, paper, scissors. Let's see how competitive you are. I'm competitive. I'm going to be talking trash to him. Did you talk trash back to me? Right? It was awesome, though, because it did anything you compete at. When you compete with somebody that's competitive, they're going to go at you no matter what, no matter what game you're playing.
That's good. How concerned are you about the Eagles after that?
Where I come from, I don't question anyone's intelligence because I'm not the smartest knife in the drawer. I will, however, tell you that if we are asked to do an update at night, Ivanka and I will play rock, paper, scissors to see who doesn't have to do it.
I don't know what everyone's squawking about. It's called Rochambeau, okay? The game is called Rochambeau, and if you play it right, it can be competitive. So I don't know what everyone's squawking about here. Rochambeau it up.
Who be what now?
Let's go to Chapo.
There's competitive. Do you remember Seb Gattaca?
Yeah.
He won a competitive Rochambeau tournament.
He was one of our old PR guys.
All right, go ahead.
Speaking of competitive, Felix Auger-Aliassime beat Italy's Lorenzo Musetti today to advance to the third round at the Barcelona Open. Felix will now face fellow Canadian Denis Shapovalov tomorrow.
Bryson DeChambeau.
It will be the fifth career head-to-head meeting. They've each won twice.
Yeah.
The 22-year-old Shapovalov and the 20-year-old Auger-Aliassime are good friends. Tim, do you have a friend that you really enjoy beating at sports?
Yeah, actually, it's Adnan Virk.
Is it?
In tennis, yeah. I really enjoy.
Careful.
And I can't
Careful around Adnan now. He might learn some new moves with his new gig being the voice of WWE.
He would beat me all the time. He'd play that game where you just pop it back every time and I would get bored and go for the winner.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then finally I just said, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. I'm going to play his game. And I just...
It's all day rally.
Just these all day rallies where I just pop it back.
Waiting for another team to make the mistake. Is that the tennis definition of the trap? You just sit back and wait?
Yeah. You know, Madani's got a big mouth when it comes to tennis.
I don't see any tennis trophies from the Truro Tennis Club. He's apparently pretty good.
I'm back in the day when Kenny and I used to play beer league hockey. Yeah. Kenny beating anyone was his favorite thing.
He
was a little competitive.
And chirping.
He would have impressed the Eagles coaching staff, for sure.
Yes, I would.
One more. Acadia University announced today that Kyle Lowry is one of seven people who will receive honorary doctorates from the school at this year's virtual convocation ceremony. Former Prime Minister Paul Martin is one of the other honorees. Ken, your co-host Ivanka Osmak, has received an honorary doctorate from Nipissing University, and your dad is a doctor, so why aren't you a doctor?
Not smart enough to get into medical school, first and foremost. No interest, because my dad would be on call, and calls would come in the middle of the night, and I said, I'm getting a job where I'm going to work 4 hours a night, except on Wednesdays when I work for free on Tim and Friends.
Although you are rocking a nice Acadia hat right now.
Dr. Scott Landry, Kevin Dickey, Darren Burns. Here we go, boys.
Hey.
Michael Chase on.
Honorary degree. Never mind Kyle Lowry. There's a real East Coaster here that could deserve one. All right, we're done. There's some tarp on the field. We'll figure it all out. Showman and everyone got you covered. Blue Jays Central, Jamie Campbell is next.